Today is the second anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown Jr., an 18-year-old black man, by then Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. The incident sparked protests around the country and jump-started the Black Lives Matter movement.
Chad Dion Lassiter joins us now to talk about this anniversary and whether progress has been made since the death of Michael Brown. He's the president of Black Men at Penn and a professor of race at the University of Pennsylvania. Chad, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. Good evening.
So how significant is this second anniversary of Ferguson?
I think the second anniversary of Ferguson is really, really significant in the sense that we can see what we still need to do and what we have done. I think we still have an anthology of police brutality in our democracy, and we need to really start talking about best practices, both from a community level, from a federal level, and from a police level, so that we can make our community safer for both law enforcement and for the citizens.
As we just mentioned, the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson started the Black Lives Matter movement. That was certainly not the first time that a black man had died at the hands of a police officer and a white police officer at that. Why was Ferguson such a spark for that movement?
I think because what we have is the ushering in of a new generation of social change agents who are using innovative things like a hashtag, a die-in, where previous generations may have done a sit-in. I think what Black Lives Matter has also done was take the scars and the suffering from some black males and brown males and black females and brown females as well, being killed by some police officers with impunity, and said this is a positive way to speak back to some of these scars and suffering. Black lives indeed matter in our democracy. We get it that all lives matter, but in a democracy, it always has seemed to be that black lives have always been seen as three-fifths or second-class citizens.
And how would you plot the evolution of the Black Lives Matter movement in these 2 years since Ferguson?
I think they've done a tremendous job. I think what's lost on the efforts that they've done is that we tend to lump in some of the challenges we've seen from a violent standpoint with Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter has been civil disobedience. It's been peaceful. And you will get individuals who will come into the movement, and you'll see some of the deviant behavior that we saw down in Dallas, that we saw in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. People will say, oh, it's a radical organization. It's not radical. It's an organization that emerges to simply say, listen, we need to do something about police who are paid servants, paid to protect and serve, killing some of the black males and brown males and females as well in our community. I think they're definitely concerned about, you know, the crime that they see in their community, but they're focusing on police brutality and the anthology of police killings.
Do you think there's anything that the Black Lives Matter movement might have done better or differently to further their cause in the last few years? Any missteps that you see?
Not missteps per se. I think that leadership is good to be shared, but I think that it should have been and still has the potential of being an infrastructure where you have identified leaders. But for the most part, these are young people who didn't ask for permission. They didn't go to the old guard, i.e. maybe a Jesse Jackson or a Al Sharpton, or who people identify as leaders in Black America. And they just wanted to find a way to bring attention to this. And I think they've done a tremendous job in doing so, and they have proven to have sustainable efforts in doing so.
And how far would you gauge the reach of Black Lives Matter right now? Has it gone past the boundaries of the U.S.? Is it global at this point?
It's definitely a global phenomenon. I think that's one of the things that we don't see with our mainstream media. But if you look at Democracy Now, or if you look at BBC News, I was in Norway back in March, and I was invited to Bergen, Norway, simply because some students saw me on Huffington Post talking about Mike Brown and Ferguson. You have individuals who are over in China, over in Brazil, in Vietnam, who look like individuals who, you know, they want to bring attention to it, and they're holding up signs that reads Black Lives Matter. You have white students here in the United States and white people in general out in Cal Berkeley and various other places who are marching saying Black Lives Matter. And so it's definitely on all sides of the color line, and it's a global phenomenon.
We're talking with Chad Dion Lassiter right now. He's president of Black Men at Penn and a professor of race at the University of Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the second anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And Chad, since Michael Brown's death, there have been other shootings of black men, recent shootings, including Alton Sterling in Louisiana, Philando Castile in Minnesota. Those have, besides being more fodder for the Black Lives Matter movement, also kind of reinvigorated the All Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter hashtags and sentiments. Can you talk about those two movements and how they relate to Black Lives Matter?
Well, I think one, to say all lives matter when someone is trying to define themselves in a society that displays with implicit bias and microaggressions is this, it's just really disingenuous. You wouldn't show up to a HIV or AIDS benefit holding a sign, cancer matters also. I wouldn't go to a funeral where someone has been killed and say, you know, aloud, my son got shot and killed as well. Blue lives, is not a life. It's an occupation. Blackness is non-negotiable. So when we look at Blue Lives Matter, that doesn't even make any sense to me. What does make sense is that we're to respect those officers who respect us. There are a lot of police officers in America who put their lives on the line. There's a fear of calamity that they will not come home to their families because they serve humanity. A farmer doesn't look at his crop and says to himself aloud, I have one bad apple. He says, this apple's bad. I need to get rid of it. And so the police department has to have individuals who will break through the wall of the blue wall of silence and the status quo to really just step up and speak out against those individuals who are doing these killings.
I think, though, that something that needs to be acknowledged is that there is a lot of frustration and anger and grief about police officers who are killed randomly, as we saw recently in Houston and in Baton Rouge, that there are possibly maybe the best, most compassionate cops out there who are not being viewed because of how they act, but because of that uniform that they're wearing. What would you say to people for whom Blue Lives Matter is really a reaction to that kind of violence?
Well, I think that nobody promotes the violence of anyone killing police officers. I think in every community, in white communities, in black communities, Asian American, Pacific Islander communities, people know those officers who are good, decent police officers. I think we also know those officers who engage in the behaviors that we've seen in our democracy. Once again, being a member of the Blue Life Movement, being a part of the police department is an occupation that you choose. In our democracy, you can't choose to be African American. It's who you are. You can't choose to be an individual who says, well, because I'm black, maybe they're not going to kill me. It just seems to be a challenge in our democracy. And once again, nobody should call for retaliation in the manner that we've seen it. I think retaliation could be getting the United Nations involved, getting civil rights organizations involved, black and white humanity and all humanity coming together to speak back to the injustices of police officers getting off after killing, you know, black and brown people with impunity.
We're talking to national race relations expert Chad Dion Lassiter now about the second anniversary of the death of Michael Brown Jr. in Ferguson, Missouri.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think things have changed for better or worse since the Ferguson protests? What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement? What work do you think needs to be done to improve the relationship between police departments, police officers, and minority communities in cities around the country? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our conversation now with national race relations expert Chad Dion Lassiter about the second anniversary of the death of Michael Brown Jr. in Ferguson, Missouri.
Have things changed in your community in the 2 years since Ferguson? Have you participated at all in the Black Lives Matter movement? What do you think about that movement, or All Lives Matter, or Blue Lives Matter? What would you like to see done differently when it comes to policing in your community? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And so, Chad, do you see any change over those last 2 years in relations overall between police departments and communities of color?
I think that it's hard to quantify just what we've seen. I know that one of the things that we have to do is continue to do the work. I think when we look at the DOJ report that emerged out of Ferguson, one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, are those recommendations being implemented? I know that all over the country there have been a coming together of law enforcement and community through neighborhood town hall meetings, cookouts, sporting events, and things of that nature. And that's all good. That's an initial first step. But we have to have a serious, frank conversation centered around, why is it that some officers view black and brown people with, one, suspicion, and then, two, in a stereotypical manner?
Let's go to the phones, and Tim and Marinette is up first. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm curious. Michael Brown, I thought, was shown that he had, in fact, been the aggressor against the police officer, that there were bruises on the officer, that there were fingerprints, Michael Brown's fingerprints were on the officer's gun. And so if in fact he was the aggressor, I'm curious as to why Black Lives would hold him up as the, for lack of a better term, the poster child for Black Lives Matter.
So, Tim, are you saying that Michael Brown in particular is not a good choice, but that maybe there would be other better choices?
That's what I'm questioning, mm-hmm. because it doesn't bode well for the movement to hold up someone who is not a sympathetic character. I mean, it's a shame that someone lost their life. No doubt. You know, it's mm-hmm. a horrible thing. But he was the aggressor, and from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. because I would like to learn.
Thanks for that call, Tim. And Chad, how would you respond to that, saying maybe Michael Brown isn't the best person to rally behind?
Well, who's the judge and juror? It's the same thing that we saw in the Trayvon Martin situation, this notion of how we really demonize one segment of the population and then how we look at another segment of the population. When you look at the killing of 9 people in the Charleston, South Carolina church, Dylan Roof was kind of humanized. We looked at him from a biopsychosocial perspective. When the Michael Brown, Darren Wilson situation occurred, Darren Brown went deeply down. He went into the deeply rooted stereotype. Well, I felt like I was going to lose my life. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. It's not about empathy or sympathy. If Michael Brown was the aggressor, he should have been arrested, not killed.
Thanks for that call, Tim. Let's go now to Deb in Monticello. Hi, Deb.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to reiterate really what your guest said, and that's when a movement begins, like the LGBTQ movement or women's rights movements, there's a statement that's being made. And when people are targeted, as both of those groups have, and as I believe black males have been, I think you have to start somewhere. And to me, this seems like a great way to start. And to take away from the group by saying all lives matter and blue lives matter, which, of course, all lives do matter. But this is one group who really needs to be looked at, be discussed, and figure it out, because it's not right.
Thanks for that call, Deb. And Chad, let's also bring on Brenda and Granton next, and I'll have you respond to both. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think the movement is a little ridiculous. The people that you have mentioned were committing crimes. I'm sorry. If you commit a crime, you put yourself in that risk. The young man was going after this guy, the officer. He was bigger. You know, it happens. Sadly, it happens. I know my daughter was murdered. But for these groups to go out there and now calling for having officers shot, and I have heard them, you know, they've had in protests where they have called to have officers shot and killed. It's ridiculous. And now you are also hearing to have that they're calling to have white people killed because of our skin tone.
Okay, Brenda, let's leave it there. I want Chad to be able to respond to both. So clearly strong feelings both for and against Black Lives Matter, Chad.
Nowhere in a democracy have you had an African-American or black organization, whatever terminology you want to use, that have systematically killed white people. It's never happened. White people weren't hung by black people. White people were not enslaved by black people. The individuals that are coming to the Black Lives Matter movement with the aggressive rhetoric are not members of the Black Lives Matter movement. In our democracy, blacks have always been looked upon as subhuman. The mere fact that the caller mentioned that Michael Brown was the aggressor and that Darren Wilson, who has the gun, has the law, and has the badge. No one should be killed in the manner that Eric Garner was killed. No one should be killed in the manner the way the young man was killed in Dallas and in Baton Rouge, or Sandra Bland, and the list goes on and on. And then on the other side of the color line, we have Dylan Roof, who goes to Burger King. We have Timothy McVeigh, who walks into a courtroom of law. Ted Bundy, the Unabomber. All these individuals walk into the courtroom of law. White males are pointing guns at police officers, and police officers are telling them, put the gun down. Black males have their hands up and they're dying. So I don't care if a Michael Brown was a high school dropout. He's still a human being. Michael Brown could have been an Ivy League educated individual, and he would still have been a victim of police brutality, given the anthology of police brutality with some white officers and the psyche of white supremacy. The previous caller is absolutely right. Black Lives Matter is a statement similar to the 60s. I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud. Martin Luther King comes on board, and Martin Luther King, he did some things to push the paradigm to say, let's start looking at black ministers when he penned the letter from a Birmingham jail. So it's not saying that all lives don't matter. In our democracy, we understand that white lives matter because we have white privilege. You don't have driving while white. You don't have the Fair Housing Act that discriminates against whites who are trying to get housing. You don't have a black employer telling white people that they can't get jobs. But you have Hispanic people who have to change their names from Jose to Joe just so that they can get an interview. And so it makes all the sense in the world to have Black Lives Matter. And once again, we have white individuals who have joined in this movement who said Black Lives Matter. And they have shown how black humanity tied to white humanity brings about ultimate humanity.
We're talking with Chad Dion Lassiter, president of Black Men at Penn and a professor of race at the University of Pennsylvania, and we are talking about the second anniversary of the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Let's go back to the phones and Greg in Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good afternoon. What a great topic. I would like for your guest to comment on, in my opinion, Michael Brown was not the aggressor. I would like your guest to comment on the working relationships between district attorneys and police officers. Can a district attorney be fair and impartial when he has to investigate and potentially prosecute the same individuals that work with him to develop a case? I think until that dramatically changes, that there will not be a change fundamentally in the way that these things take place. I will take my comment off the air.
Thanks for that, Greg. So, Greg, bringing up a different element of, Chad, what you are saying about the systems that are in place and have been in place for a long time.
I think Greg stated it all. I want to thank Greg for calling in and laying out what I think is not asking me a question, but a brilliantly articulated analysis, in the sense that you need an independent prosecutor, because a colleague is not going to find a colleague guilty because they're working in concert with one another. Even when you look at some of the killings that have occurred, you haven't had white police officers or black police officers or officers of color come out and denounce some of these behaviors. And so, once again, the killings that we saw of law enforcement, we definitely don't want that to occur. But then we'll have a president of the United States who said, when you attack a police officer, you're attacking law and order in the democracy. But when you kill unarmed black and brown individuals, what is that saying? Well, to the African-American community and multiple other communities, even white communities with racial consciousness, is saying that you are still continuing to treat the African and the African-American as subhuman, or what Ralph Ellison said, the invisible. So I think you need independent prosecution. I don't think you can rely on the Department of Justice. We may have to actually go to the United Nations, because it's bordering on being a human rights violation.
We're getting a little short on time, but I want to bring Josie in Sheboygan on the line. Hi, Josie.
Hi. I'm a senior citizen, white, and I agree that blacks have been discriminated against through all of the history of this country. And I think just maybe if they had said Black Lives Matter too, that way that nobody else could accuse them of eliminating everybody else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Josie. And Chad, what would you say to that?
I think Josie has a good point, but once again, in the society, you don't need the two, because white privilege lets us know that all lives matter. Black Lives Matter is not a radical group. Black Lives Matter is to send out a rallying cry, a political cry to say, Black Lives Matter. It's a plea. Stop killing our brothers and sisters. Stop killing our cousins. Stop killing our nieces and our godsons and our goddaughters. See the humanity. If we're guilty of something, take us to arrest us. Send someone out to de-escalate, to engage in conciliatory methods, conflict resolution, but don't kill us with impunity.
In just the last minute here, Chad, what do you think can be done to rebuild trust between law enforcement and communities of color?
Well, I think communities of color can't have it both ways. They can't castigate law enforcement, and then when someone breaks into their home or does something deviant in their community, they want to call the police. I think communities of color also need to step up and speak out and try to push back against the narrative that is so pervasive in communities of color, no snitching. I think police officers have to continue to have anti-racism training, diversity training, and they have to see the humanity of all individuals. Police review boards with trusted community figures on those boards. And I think we still have more policies that we have to put in place with regards to cameras, with regards to prosecution, with regards to police officers not taking the tape, hiding the tape like they did in Chicago, and it emerges 18 months later. We have a lot of work to do. I think that we can turn this around, but the anthology of police brutality is deeply rooted in the fabric of our democracy.
Well, Chad, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Chad Dion Lassiter, president of Black Men at Penn and a professor of race at the University of Pennsylvania. He joined us to talk about the second anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown Jr. in Ferguson, Missouri. You can keep the conversation going on the Central Time Facebook page.